Well, Sixers fans, freedom did not ring in the nation's capital on MLK Day for the 76ers, but they do have two wins since the last time we spoke. Hope everyone's doing well out there in the Sixers community. Welcome to the Sixers Talk Podcast. Danny Pommels, NBC Sports Philadelphia.com writer extraordinaire, Noah Levitt. Check out his three observations on the Wizards game on NBC Sports Philadelphia.com. You will gain some knowledge for sure. And Ben Berry, in the cut like a Band-Aid, per usual, our producer doing his thing. And Noah, the glass is still half full for these 76ers. They gave up 38 points in the first quarter to the Wizards. They were playing their third game in a four-day span. You could tell the legs weren't quite there. Embiid gets baptized by Kyle Kuzma. It just wasn't the type of game you wanted to enjoy as a Sixers fan maybe your day off from work, your day off from activities. Maybe you were out in the community helping people in the MLK Day of Service, or however you enjoyed it. I think the thing that continues to be on my mind, Noah, and this is where I'll start. You know, we'll get to the Ben Simmons stuff. Matisse Thybulle is on the shelf for about a week with a shoulder issue. We'll get to that as well. But let's say that Joel Embiid wasn't playing for the team for a while. Where do they go? What would they do if he wasn't on the floor as he continues his assault on road teams, 11 straight 30-point game? He needs some help, Noah, and it's more evident than any time in games like against the Wizards where they just don't quite have it as a supporting cast for Embiid. Only one other Sixer double figures, Tyrese Maxey. What would they do without Joel? The guy needs some help.
I think we partially have an answer to that question in that they are 3-8 this season without him, and they're 22-10 when he plays. So,
right.
No doubt, like, they're not getting anywhere unless he's healthy, and that's why it is, you know, understandable to be stressed out as a fan whenever he has a minor injury or to worry about his health to a high degree, just because he's so important. But as you said, yesterday's game was a clunker. I'm on the same page with you, it sounds like, in not feeling like it's a huge deal given the difficult circumstances. And also given the Sixers had three key players out in Danny Green, Shake Milton, and Matisse Thybulle, and the Wizards were healthy for the first time in a very long time. Bradley Beal returned from a three-game health and safety protocols absence. And boy, Washington looked awfully deep compared to the Sixers, who used
seven guys in double figures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Montrezl Harrell was one of, I believe, three or four Wizards to score in double figures off the bench. And the Sixers had Charlie Brown Jr., who signed a two-way contract.
Bless his heart. Bless his heart, man.
Yeah, I mean, and like in my mind, had some positive moments and did some nice things on Beal, but he's your sixth man. That is an indication of your team being very shorthanded, and that's what the Sixers were. And as you said, just very, very little support for Joel Embiid. And when that's the case, it's usually not going to end with a great result.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Yeah, man, it's just, you're creeping up on the halfway point here. We're a month away from the All-Star break, less than a month, in fact. It's weird because, you know, you're the one seed last year and this whole Simmons thing happens and suddenly you're knocked all the way down to the sixth seed, maybe even getting into the play-in game. But there's so many great things happening with the team, with Tyrese Maxey's progression, with Joel Embiid showing why he was the MVP runner-up last season. And there's so much to enjoy. The Sixers' road record being stellar, you know, 500 at home is tough to stomach, but at the same time, there are things that are really going positively with this team. It's just that they're not taking the leap forward that everybody's waiting for, and that's evident by Tobias Harris's struggles. And I think he really is not benefiting from the fact that Ben Simmons isn't around someone or someone like him who can set him up in the open court, who can get him the ball in transition, who can help him get those fill in the lane buckets and slashing buckets. And then you have guys like Furkan Korkmaz shooting below 29% from three with an 0-for-5 game, you know, against the Wizards. And you kind of would hope that with the opportunity that Simmons' absence presents in the backcourt, that someone other than Tyrese Maxey would seize the day, and the Sixers need help, because it shouldn't fall on a second-year player to be the one who helps carry the water. And Tobias Harris, you know, I mentioned, you know, his struggles because in my eyes, he really benefited from Ben being there and someone who a pass first guard who's trying to get him some buckets. And yeah, he's missing shots and he has that right shoulder thing that I'll probably need to get looked at after the season. But if I'm Daryl Morey and I'm looking at that Wizards game and I'm seeing kind of the worst in some aspects of what the Sixers can be, and we'll get to the Simmons reports about maybe them waiting until after the season to make this trade, getting Joel Embiid some help has to be at the top of the list before this deadline comes on February 10th.
That's one way to look at it, but to be fair, the Sixers have won 9 of 10 heading into this last game. I'm not saying that's justification necessarily for complete in action.
We know there are some slim pickings on their opponents. I mean, it's not really the top-tier NBA team. They beat the Nets, yes, and it was a great game, and they had some other good wins in there, but...
For sure, yeah, and they benefited greatly from Joel Embiid playing better than anyone in the sport, of course.
Right.
But I think they're not nearly as bad as they looked against the Wizards, and the Hornets game was another stinker too, if we're being honest. So, you know, kind of in the middle of all that, we've seen that when things are clicking, this is a very good basketball team, I think. But absolutely, I think it's been fair since the start of this season to be skeptical that the pieces on this roster around Embiid are good enough to contend for a title. And the big question here has been, what do the Sixers need to do to take that final step? And in large part because of this nonstop Simmons drama, it's still unanswered. I think we've gotten a little clarity that Tyrese Maxey is probably better than most of us expected heading into the season. Tobias Harris has been worse, in part because of some unfortunate circumstances and some bad luck, and in part because of Simmons' absence. Absolutely agree with you on that point. And the Sixers, I think, are still a team with a lot of uncertainty percolating around them, despite the fact that they have this fantastic, special franchise player in Joel Embiid.
It's just interesting. You know, they are 2.5 games out of first, Noah. So that is worth noting. They're also a game or two away from being in that 7-10 range, which will get them into the play-in game. They currently sit sixth in the Eastern Conference. But there is tremendous just, I don't know, you know, the Western Conference feels a little bit more, you know, tier-based, and the hierarchy is easy to understand a little bit more, whereas the Eastern Conference, you know, you have the Bulls losing by a combined deficit of 68 points to, like, the Nets and the Bucks. But they're, you know, sitting at the top of the conference, where the Sixers have all of these, you know, unanswered questions and, you know, holes and things like that. But they're not far off of that pace. So I think it's a little bit hard to dissect. And maybe a proper move could push them closer to that upper tier. But you look at Matisse Thybulle's absence, and I think that's the next place, great place to go. And you mentioned Charlie Brown, you know, filling that void. And you can see, obviously, why Charlie Brown is a two-way player as opposed to, you know, a player who was already cemented and had a role at some team at some point in this season or in the league period. And, you know, credit to him for stepping up, because you can see the plus plays he makes and you can see some of his deficiencies as well, which I think is just exasperated by the amount of minutes he's playing. It's kind of like in spot situations and, you know, specialty minutes, you know, you can see where he can really help this team because of his athleticism and because of his willingness to guard. But then on the flip side, the offense isn't quite where the defense is with him. And, you know, he's all, you know, in Bradley Beal shorts chasing him around. He's out here chasing around Lonzo Ball and Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and whatnot. So give him credit, man, for stepping in tough situations. And, you know, with Matisse Thybulle, his absence and, you know, that play by Schroeder, which kind of led to this, unfortunately, you just kind of, you know, come to appreciate what Matisse brings to this team more and why the Sixers should be reluctant to include him or make him a sweetener in a trade or what have you. How do you think the team is dealing with Matisse's absence? And do you feel like, you know, Shake and Danny Green will be back for the game Wednesday?
I would wager no on both players. I'd be like 99.9% sure on Shake Milton, because Doc Rivers recently said he doesn't expect him back anytime soon. He's struggling.
And this is from the Drummond knee in the back thing, right? When he fell under the basket and Drummond kind of.
Yeah, that fall in the fourth quarter. I'm struggling to remember exactly which game, but obviously he's been out a while. He's been out 7 or 8 games at this point. Because of that injury, and Doc Rivers even said like he could probably beat Shake Milton in a race now. So this is a long term injury. Rivers said he doesn't think it's, you know, a surgical issue, but the Sixers are going to have to.
It's a contusion. It's a bruise. You just got to wait for the healing process to happen.
Apparently that's how they're looking at it. And then Danny Green. We'll see. I guess it's possible, but. We saw, you know, when he suffered that injury, he was moving gingerly and then went back into the game briefly and then wasn't able to complete the game. To me, that doesn't seem like a good sign for him returning imminently. And then Matisse Thybulle, of course, officially out for like at least one more week here with a right shoulder sprain, you know, diagnosed upon MRI. So. That's a lot for the Sixers to deal with, just in terms of three important rotational players. Thybulle, you know, looked up some numbers, you know, at the time of his injury, 100th percentile, so number one in the league per cleaning the glass among wings in steal percentage and block percentage, and among players who'd appeared in at least 20 games, number one in defensive field goal percentage. Which can be a deceiving stat and, you know, doesn't always match up with what you actually see in terms of was this guy like playing defense. But I think with Matisse Thybulle, it does add up. And also it's darn impressive because you look at the list of players he's spending the most time on, and it's Jason Tatum, it's Zach LaVine, it's stars, and Matisse Thybulle is holding them to a very low field goal percentage and forcing a bunch of turnovers and all of that. And it's really tough for the Sixers to be an elite defensive team without Thybulle, without Danny Green. And, you know, it's mostly unspoken these days, but without Ben Simmons, of course, as well.
Yeah. It's a shame that the Sixers can't build the way they want to. We have this Ben Simmons report that's lingering out there from Mark Stein. Let's get to that as we take a break here. We'll talk more Sixers. We'll talk Ben Simmons. We'll dive into, you know, how things are progressing with Furkan Korkmaz. We'll take a quick time out and come right back. Make your move in 2022. A Wilmington University education can take you where you want to go. Spring classes start January 10th. Apply today at wilmu.edu.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, warranted or not, all these players are under the microscope, particularly exacerbated by Ben Simmons' absence, because there's a void that's left behind and the Sixers aren't quite the same team that they were without Simmons. I mean, there's really no way to sugarcoat it. Whether you are a Simmons fan or not, he brings something to the team that they don't have. He's a dynamic player and an all-star at that. Furkan Korkmaz is not that, but him and his progress has just been really something interesting if you've been following along as a Sixers fan, particularly over these few seasons that he's been here. And we know he was on the outs at one point and eventually kind of had to be corralled back in to the organization and given a longer-term deal. He's lauded as a shooter, and the shooting, it can be hot and cold. He takes a lot of criticism from Sixers fans in some aspects because of that and the fact that the consistency isn't there. And would you attribute that to him just being a young player and trying to come into his own, or do you see bigger issues with his lack of consistency, particularly from three-point range?
I think, as I've said before, I personally like hold bench players to a lower standard with consistency in general, so I do cut him a little bit of slack there. And also, his role has changed a million times as a Sixer. He's been on the fringe of the rotation. He's been playing backup point guard. He's been starting. Like, none of that's easy to adjust to, I'm sure, in his position. But I think part of it at a certain point is you just kind of have to say this is who he is. And for whatever reason, it's difficult for him to be consistent. I think if you look mechanically, there are probably some underlying issues there as far as when he's not holding the follow through and sometimes short arming the ball. And obviously he's placed a high priority with his shot in releasing it fast. So there are pros and cons of that, and that he sure gets jumpers off better than almost anyone on the Sixers. But as far as the form being exactly the same every time, I figure that's probably not the case. So it's tough because his value just always is going to be largely dependent on whether the shots are falling, and you can't trust that with him. So I don't want to rip him too much. He's been valuable for this team this year as a ball handler, especially with Milton missing all of these games and Ben Simmons not on this roster and Tyrese Maxey adjusting to being a starting point guard for the first time. But yeah, under 30% from three for a player who's supposed to be a three-point shooter is not good. Not a good statistic for Korkmaz.
Right. Yeah, it's hard to, compare the fact that he's been asked to step into these roles to his lack of consistency, because the things are some way connected, some way mutually exclusive. So it just there's some overlap, but there's not. But, when you look at the Sixers bench, Furkan has gone from the first sub to maybe the ninth or tenth guy. And I think that speaks to what you're saying about the consistency and the role changing and where he's been with the second unit and needing to step in with the starters. And maybe, the point guard stuff is on the fringe of what his real skill set is of bringing the ball up or maybe initiating the offense or what have you. So, you got to take some of that with a grain of salt. It's just that, you know, in this void that needs to be filled, you would hope some of these guys would step up. And it's just such a strange season with the COVID stuff and the injuries that have kind of like, you know, intertwined. And you just hope to see some of that come together here as the Sixers go through this weird stretch of home for a bit and then away and home and away. And I think the shooting just is a thing that, you know, if I think going back to Brett Brown, that was what we saw, you know, Furkan as. And it just hasn't been there at a rate that you would think a shooter would have it as. And he also isn't a great free throw shooter on top of that. So it just kind of makes it a bit of an anomaly. But, you know, eventually all things figure themselves out and we'll have to, you know, continue to hope that the Sixers get the players back in their proper roles and that it, you know, kind of compartmentalizes, you know, everyone. But with all that, we have Tyrese Maxey doing his thing, and that can't, you know, go overlooked. You know, we got the Miss Kate thing with him after the game in the last home game, and then, you know, him singing the Sixers song at the press conference and his play on the court. I mean, it's just hard not to like this guy. I mean, he just seems so exuberant and youthful and innocent in some ways. And I'm sure you get the same impression, though.
Absolutely. No, he's a joy to watch play, joy to cover. Just has a real bubbly, like shining personality. And this season, he's been through a lot of adversity, both in terms of on and off the court stuff. I mean, you know, a fire on Christmas Eve, and he was quarantined, you know, by himself. At a hotel with an asymptomatic case of COVID-19 for an extended stretch, and comes out of it, you know, talking about how happy he is to be back on the court. And it all seems really genuine. I mean, I know if I was in that position, I'd have some good days and some bad days, but it really like seems like any time he gets a chance to play basketball, it's a good day for him, which I know is refreshing for a lot of fans. And he's just so exciting to watch, of course, also the way he plays the sport. So it's been really, really fun to cover his first couple professional seasons. And I think, of course, the potential is enticing as well. And everyone's curious if he's going to keep this up and he's going to develop into a full-blown star here. And hey, fair enough question for him from him wondering why us reporters are always so serious. You know, probably wouldn't be proper to sing along in that spot, but hey, fair enough. You know, sometimes we could all lighten up a little bit, and Tyrese Maxey is certainly a light, fun personality.
Yeah, I need a video montage of the Mr. Paul, the Miss Kate, the him singing the song, like all these wholesome moments. I just need to just them all bunch together at one place and, you know, give him credit after the game for his perspective. That this, you know, kind of chalked this loss up to the Wizards as just like the dog days of the NBA. Like we mentioned, they were playing 3 games in 4 days, and just the legs just didn't seem to be there. Tobias Harris just really bad on the rotation to Kyle Kuzma, which led to Joel and getting dunked on. Just from the start to finish, we talked about the 38 points in the first quarter. It really was almost. I thought they might. It seemed like it had like the Harbin, like a little bit of the throwback to the Heat game where they kind of turned the tide in that one. I thought they might turn the tide against the Wizards, but there just wasn't enough in the tank for them to do that.
Right. Joel Embiid somewhat kept them close with a couple trailing threes in third quarter. And it did feel similar to the Heat game in that I think he was 4 for 11 in the first half, but then he was hitting everything in the third, and the Sixers were not quite out of it, but you know, the Sixers of course benefit in that Heat game from Kyle Lowry and Jimmy Butler combining to go 3 for 22. Nothing similar happens against the Wizards. All their players who took the floor seem to contribute positively and having a lot of success with that drive and kick game, which has been a familiar theme in Sixers losses this season. So, hey, I guess the very small silver lining is by the end of it, guys like Embiid and Harris were on the bench, and guys like Charles Bassey were in that game, and time for the Sixers to look ahead. And again, in the spirit of spinning things positively, they do have another on paper easy-ish stretch coming up here. Next six games, none of the opponents are currently above 500. So maybe they can continue to climb the East standings.
The Magic, Clippers, and Spurs finish out the week here for the 76ers. I think Wednesday, Friday, Sunday is that those three games. So yeah, hopefully the home crowd gets treated to a win or two here over this stretch. Do you feel like with the way things have gone for the 76ers that they're coming into the All-Star break or this, you know, almost to this halfway point where you thought they might be, or a little bit below average of where you thought they'd be without this Ben Simmons thing getting resolved?
I think they're just about where I thought they'd be. I know I said before the season, I thought somewhere between third and sixth was most realistic. And I thought that they'd be able to pull off third, still attainable. The standings are tightly bunched. They're in six, but they're only 2.5 behind the team in first place. I think a lot of what's changed about this team has been predictable in terms of playing slower and being worse defensively without Ben Simmons, but also on the flip side of that, taking care of the ball well and leaning even further into being a Joel Embiid-centric team and continuing to be tough to beat when Embiid's on the court, 22-10 when their best player is available. So I think for the most part, they're where I personally thought they'd be. I think the way they've gotten there, of course, has been weird, and circumstances have been tricky. Embiid enduring a serious case of COVID-19. A dozen players on this roster spending time in health and safety protocols, the head coach having COVID as well. You know, but of course, every team's going through this. A lot of it's almost a washout, you know, because the Sixers aren't the only team dealing with a lot of tough stuff. So, yeah, for me, they're about where I thought they'd be. So half a season left to see where it all shapes out. Yeah.
Man, and what is unpredictable is this Ben Simmons situation as we continue to endure this saga. The latest report on the Simmons situation really changes the dynamic a bit, where Mark Stein is reporting that the Sixers may be willing to wait out trading Simmons until the offseason, where they could possibly swing a sign and trade for James Harden. And there are a myriad of, you know, little details and minutiae that are tied to that, where the Sixers will have to give another player probably to make the money work because of contractual things and whatnot, and the luxury tax and what have you. But the idea of waiting for Harden, of, you know, getting a player who's over 30 for a 25-year-old all-star, of how his fit might be next to Maxey maybe in the backcourt and all that, is something I think we've kind of dissected that in the past when the thought of James Harden coming here before he went to Brooklyn was around. But this new version of James Harden and the fact that you will be trading Simmons to a fellow contender in the Eastern Conference, do those things really sit with you? What are the things that stick out for you from hearing that Mark Stein report and the idea of Simmons for Harden and waiting until the offseason to make that move?
Well, it is, to me at least, a somewhat valid reason for waiting. Which we've talked about before, that a lot of the unknown variables with that are, like, how viable is it that you could actually land a star? If the buzz is that Harden, you know, could be legitimately available in a sign and trade, then I do think that's like a significant factor to weigh. But the risks there are significant. I mean, it's a good point. It would sure sting to like lose to Ben Simmons in, you know, the second round of the playoffs or something along those lines. Lose to Ben Simmons and Kyrie Irving in the second round of the playoffs. And James Harden will be a year older. I've thought for a while that he's a player who could still be all-star level, potentially into his mid to late 30s, just because for a long time he said that quote-unquote old man game, the ability to kind of draw free throws and create space without exceptional athleticism. And then just the sign and trade versus a trade, of course, the dynamics there are totally different, because the idea is James Harden not wanting to stay with the Brooklyn Nets in that scenario. And of course, there's nothing firm to indicate that he is.
Right. All that he said is that he loves being in Brooklyn, right?
Right. Like you're looking at on the record stuff, and you figure he would love being in Brooklyn. He's, you know, friends with the two other stars on that team, and the Nets are a contender and should have a chance to win the NBA championship this year, provided their best players are healthy. So I think that's a lot of uncertainty and a lot of stuff that we won't have a better idea on until the offseason. But hey, James Harden, yeah, he's a legitimate top tier superstar still, you know, even at 33 years old. But, you know, it's, of course, not an optimal situation. But it's also intriguing, you know, it's a chance to land James Harden. And that in and of itself is something that, you know, deserves serious consideration.
We say this, and you mentioned the health and the Nets being sustainable at the top of the conference and competing for a championship. And we say this as Kevin Durant is out, I believe, 4 to 6 weeks with an MCL sprain. So it is such a tenuous, as we all know, particularly with Joel Embiid and enduring, you know, his absences, that it is a tenuous, you know, a thin line that kind of keeps this all in place for any team. And I feel like the Harden trade doesn't quite move the needle for me the way it might have previously. I do feel like when I look at the Sixers, they need to be athletic and interchangeable. And I don't know if a ball dominant James Harden even adds anything to Tyrese Maxey's development as well. So I think I probably need to sit down and write out the pros and cons for each and figure out, you know, where the chips fall. But I just I would be happy if they were able to solidify, which reports said the Sixers were interested in, a top 25 player for Ben Simmons. In my mind, the real get for them would be get two young guys, you know, a la Halliburton and Buddy Hield, you know, that type of thing probably makes me more intrigued, because I feel like it gives them some more of that versatility and interchangeableness and positionless basketball stuff. But, you know, am I going to balk at James Harden? You know, probably not. But, you know, the details there with the sweetener the Sixers might have to include, because the numbers might not quite add up and things like that, and the luxury tax issues that are associated with it do give me a little bit of pause, but I would live with it if I had to.
Right. Yeah. It would be far from perfect for sure. I'm with you on that. But
what about waiting past the deadline though? Do you feel like that February 10th and seizing the moment right now while Embiid is rolling is more important than trying to leverage it all the way out that way?
I think it depends exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, I know it's not like a satisfying answer, but it does depend exactly on what's on the table, and then just like gauging what actually is realistic in terms of Harden, in terms of Lillard, etc. I really don't think it's unjustifiable, and I know that's probably not the popular opinion. And I do think it matters also. I think this has happened since our last podcast, where Embiid gave pretty public support to the idea that would be okay. you know, not having to read too much between the lines. He said, like, it's not urgent to do anything. Like, we have what we need. We have everything we need, was his quote. I think that matters if Embiid is on the same page as Daryl Morey and not feeling like something needs to be forced if it's not there right now. So I think that's significant, and I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world if the Sixers waited, as long as they do nail it post-deadline.
Yeah, it's just I think, you know, in this idea that the Sixers would be able to have a championship with Embiid and Simmons, and then to devolve into where we are now, and to then have another season where this current roster, fully healthy, clicking all cylinders, probably isn't a title winning team, isn't maybe an Eastern Conference Finals team, depending on, you know, how the chips fall with who they play in the postseason. But they're not of the upper echelon if they're fully healthy without making a Ben Simmons trade or any significant, you know, move. They don't really have a whole lot of chips in order to, you know, entice other teams to make a move for another all-star. But, you know, all credit to Daryl Morey and what he's done in the past, that could possibly, you know, happen for this team. But it still remains to be seen. So I just feel like waiting, and it just kind of gives me a little bit of that apprehension that it makes it even more important that they nail it if you do wait. It makes it even more significant that they get it right and that it improves the team and that they go into the next season with this strong offseason and then a great training camp and then hopefully a good draft along the way. And then that propels them into this new, you know, group that can really contend for a championship instead of pretend that they're there.
Yeah, I will say, like, if you're of the opinion that the Sixers are not currently up in the upper echelon and they're not that close to actually winning the NBA championship, then you could argue it's not really, quote unquote, wasting a season, like, to not make a marginal upgrade right now. So I think that's the other perspective here. I think we've turned over a lot of the ways to look at it.
Right.
And we're all pretty aware of what's at stake and the pros and cons for various moves. But I mean, personally, I think I'm in the same boat in not believing the Sixers championship odds are very good now and not thinking that a small upgrade is sufficient to make them a strong championship contender. I do also think it's a unique season, as we've discussed a bunch, and like luck is playing a bigger role than ever in the NBA nowadays. So, like, there's a world where a team just gets on Joel Embiid's back, and because the Bulls have some bad luck, and the Bucks have some bad luck, and the Nets have some bad luck, like the Sixers do in the Eastern Conference. But does it look likely? No, doesn't look likely as things stand.
Man, Sixers fans, it is the psyche of a Philadelphia sports fan. I think it would be an interesting introspective look at really human beings in general, because the power that they have to hold over not being upset or lashing out at the disappointment or letdowns or setbacks is very interesting. But hey, every step of the way, we'll be here on the Sixers Talk podcast, no matter what. We will rejoin you Thursday after the Magic game. And we hope we're talking about another Sixers victory, because they need them at home in front of the fans. Hey, everybody out there, remember, if you're coming to the arena and you don't have a religious or medical exemption, you will need a copy of your vaccination to enter the arena. And I guess you will need to bring that religious or medical exemption to show that you don't need to have your vax card. So something to remember before coming out, if you did not know. That started January 3rd. And here we are in the new year with the Sixers suffering their first road loss. Hopefully another win will follow it against the Magic. For Noah Levick, I'm Danny Pommels, and Ben Berry as well. Thanks for listening to the Sixers Talk podcast, brought to you by Wilmington University, Wilmu Works.